And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Lauren Clark. Lauren is the author of the celebrated podcast, The Fitzroy Diaries. She writes for children's television, including the international hit Bluey, and has won acclaim for her plays People Watching and the For We Are Young and Free. And Lauren plays the oboe. But today we'll be talking about her new memoir, Would That Be Funny? Growing Up with John Clark. Lauren, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Thank you so much. And it's excellent to get the oboe into an introduction. just to set the scene for precisely how dorky I really am. I've always thought the oboe is the instrument of the confident dork.
Well, we'll have to all make our own judgments on that after we've spoken
to
you.
And hello to any oboists out there. I love you all.
Well, look, it's hard to believe, but your father, John Clark, died in 2017. Does that length of time make it a bit easier for you to write a more complete account of your life with him?
I reckon, you know, it's interesting when somebody dies and you experience grief for the first time. It's a bit like when, you know, you have a baby, actually, because all of the not all, but a lot of cliches become true. And you think, you know, things like when you have a kid, it's like the days are long, but the years are short, that sort of thing, you know. And I think the one about grief really is that time is your helpful friend and you can't steal more of it. So you sort of do have to be at a certain, have a certain distance from things to sort of be able to look back and see some stuff, but also I think I've always had a little bit in my head two versions of my dad. There was the guy we knew at home, and he always had this public side to him, you know, from when I was born, before I was born. So there is a slightly, like, writing about the public him was not hard. But sharing the private side of him, which is pretty much the same guy, he's at home doing silly things at birthday parties and stuff like that. That was a little bit hard for me to do because I sort of, like, a little bit it's that thing that all writers have of who cares about this, you know. But the other thing about it is that I think having, like, knowing that he had that audience who he had such a love for, I sort of hoped that people would want to see that he kind of is how you would imagine him.
Look, I think everyone is really hungry for that sort of information. And I must say that everyone I know, and whenever I mention the name John Clark, everyone has a positive recollection. You mention a mother at a kindy's barbecue party who insisted to you, of all people, that, well, you don't understand. I grew up with him.
And I totally understood what she was saying. It was only later that I giggled at it because I thought, well, hang on, no, I grew up with him probably slightly more significant way than you did. But, yeah, I mean, I remember formative kind of cultural experiences and laughing at stuff. I mean, laughing at stuff together as a family, those are kind of the treasured memories that get hardwired into sort of who you are as a person. So a lot of people watched Fred Dagg at home in the lounge room or Clerkendore, and they watched it together. So I've had a lot of people saying to me, you know, every time I see a Clerkendore, I think of my dad or my mum or, you know, whatever. So I don't know. I think that's pretty special. And that's really what I was attempting to honour in a way because, yeah, when he died, we felt the love, our family, the Clark family. We felt the love from New Zealand, we felt the love from Australia. There were people writing on YouTube videos and stuff all from all over the world who loved his stuff. So But there is something about having a relation, a sort of that parasocial relationship, you know, with somebody that, like, you know, you don't actually know, where you sort of, particularly these days, you kind of not quite sure if that's part of their performance.
You set out in the book your family history, going right back to beyond your grandparents to your great-grandparents. Mm. Is this something that your whole family is interested in, they're doing the family history?
Oh, my God. It's so, so boringly part of my family. And I resisted it, let me tell you, until this book, when, of course, I was trying in a way to sort of do what Dad did about everything, which was he'd look at the context, he'd look at the system, he'd look at the history, and he'd say, well, for instance, his parents, they did not get along, and he would say they couldn't really, they were just in survival mode because they'd been thrown into a war that really kind of steered their life away from them. They were not in control of it, and then they had to come back from this international experience with trauma, deep-seated trauma, and then get married. And so he always insisted that you can't understand their domestic situation without the kind of that context, you know. And I sort of realised that you can't tell the story of him without that either, and you can't tell the story of me without him, without his parents, you know. So and then of course you think, well, what made my grandfather like he was? And then you realise his story's in interesting context as well. So I've become one of the boring people looking at family trees around the kitchen table as well.
Well, well, on that topic, do you see any similarities between yourself and your father, John Clark?
I do. It's interesting because with this book coming out, a few people have said things like, you write very differently from your dad, that there is something in the way that you write that is like him. And I think what that might be is a kind of observational perspective on, like, sort of getting to the heart of, like, he did it in a really specific, sharp, satirical way, and I do it in more of a kind of looking at everyday life kind of way. But that lens where you do not, nothing goes unnoticed. You have to, like, I nobody wants to sit next to me in a cafe because I will be listening to the table next to me, and just getting sort of the way they talk, the rhythm. I don't even need to hear what they're saying, you know, that, which Dad's mother, my grandmother Neva, did too. She was always sort of like a kind of magpie, picking up little bits of other people's lives so that she could sort of study them and think about their stories. So I think that, in our writing, that's really similar. And also I think we both have a bit of an approach to life that is, oh, well, life's a bit of a shambles, and but it's also pretty fascinating. So, you know, like that sort of thinking your way through things with a bit of a you might as well enjoy yourself kind of an attitude. Those are the two things I think that I'm a bit similar to him. There are many, many differences, but those I think are the key similarities.
One thing you mention in your book is that you had this experience of, I think you call it vroosh, where you you tend to blush in certain situations or when you get nervous or before you're appearing in public. I was just wondering, did your father, John, ever get nervous or stage fright?
Oh, yeah. Dad did not. He got nervous, and he also said, you know, it's okay to get nervous. It's part of the process. It kind of shows you care a bit. If you're about to go on stage and you're not feeling nervous, sometimes that can be an indication that you're not sort of on your game. But he did part of the reason why Fred Dagg, which only went for sort of 4 years, apparently, and he was in his early 20s when he did Fred Dagg in New Zealand. That was a lot of live shows, and they did a thing, it was unique at the time, and that was to tour a stage show. And I think after that, you'll find he did not do a lot of live stuff because it does require, like, a hell of a lot of energy. And I think there was something that he sort of learnt from doing that that was, I actually think I might be better when I'm slightly more prepared. Mm. And it's less to dependent on the moment. Because when you do a live show, you know, the instinct is to, oh, they just laughed at that. Oh, they'll laugh at this then. And to sort of lean into, and it's great. It's a, well, I love it. I love that stuff, live performance. But I'm not sure he did in the end. I think what he edged away from was that. And I think that probably was to do with him being, it being really high octane, you know, kind of I'm flying by the seat of my pants type of nervous. And what he pretty much did from the day he came to Australia was watched and listened and wrote, started to write. And actually, those Fred Dagg things were performed. He used to do what he called performing his way out of trouble. But he learnt that actually, oh no, I think I prefer when I've written something, when I can edit it together, when I'm a little bit more in control of the project. So yeah, I think that was probably partly to do with the creative urge and partly to do with, oh, I'm not sure I can do this to myself for too long.
And we're speaking today with Lauren Clark, who is the author of Would That Be Funny? Growing Up with John Clark. Lauren, about this part of the show, we always ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Have you got a song that you'd like us to play?
Yep. We used to call this song Keep Your Motor Running because my mother used to come alive when this song came on. And then what would happen would be if when we later got cats in our life, they would start purring and she would sing it to them.
Born to be wild.
And that was the song by Steppenwolf called... Not
Run For Life. No, see, that's what just happened to me because I had my mum's version in my head.
Yeah. Born to be Wild. Born to be Wild by Steppenwolf. A great selection by our guest today, Lauren Clark, who is the author of Would That Be Funny? Growing Up with John Clark. Now, speaking of this book, Lauren, I notice on the cover that shows you and your father laughing. Now, there's also a contradiction because... not with the laughing, but with You're in Pink, which I understand is not your favourite colour. How did this picture come around?
That is one of my favourite photographs taken by a family friend, and I love it. However, I look like the most 90s oboe playing, what am I wearing, what did I do to my hair kind of... version of myself. So yeah, and I'm wearing a pink thing, and I'm anyway. So it's very, it's not exactly the fairest representation of who I am as a human being. But there is some very dorky truth to it as well. But yeah, that was. I mean, Dad and my mum, who's a writer, and she's an academic writer and an art historian, and my sister, who's a writer in the sort of group project we had in our house of reading each other's writing. All of us are writers in some different sort of form. My mum's an academic writer, my sister's a legal and policy type writer, but we all used to read each other's plays, read each other's film scripts, read each other's essays sometimes. And, you know, we'd do table reads of plays and TV shows and stuff with friends and stuff around the table, with each person getting a part that you could read. And if it was your thing, you read the big print, as they say, the sort of, the narrative arc stuff. So it's a nice photograph because it's exactly, it represents both Dad and me in a private moment, but also our creative / professional sides as well. So I was rather tickled that we had that photo, despite me looking like maybe I had not quite learnt how to be, a human person in the world who didn't dye her hair a slightly red colour in the bath one day, which is definitely what happened before that photo.
Well, John gave and got some good advice along the way, which you kindly pass on to us. And one I like was, it's up to us to find the pluses in this world. So would you say writing notes to the schools was an opportunity for some pluses?
Yeah. There are some letters envelopes in the book that are photographed that I was sent by my school teachers. After Dad died, in the weeks after Dad died, I went and got the mail, and I discovered these had been sent to me, and, you know, burst into tears and got the giggles all at once because they are so funny and silly and stupid. And they are, he used to send, what used to happen in the olden days is that everything, of course, was on paper rather than digital. And so if you had a permission slip that you needed to hand in for music camp or something, you had to give it to your kid and write on the front, you know, it needed to be a named envelope and a sealed named envelope. And so the first one that is in our collection was, yes, a named sealed envelope, as you might expect. And then from there, he just sort of varied the form. For years, like I was there for, 6 years, and the wall of the staff room was full of them. You'd go in there, and if you had a blood knee or something for someone to put a Band-Aid on, you'd look up, they're just envelopes all up the wall. And they said things like, Lauren Clark's music camp money, 2, 3, 4, the music camp, 3, 4. You know, he sort of played with form and so on. And it was exactly what you say. It was, I could send this form in and be normal. But I'm going to send it in and I'm going to turn it into something slightly amusing and enjoy the sort of the slightly formal element of it in a way that is not taking that formal element seriously.
Did your father, or you, I guess at times as well, did you feel any pressure that you have to be funny all the time? Was that sort of a bit of a weight on your shoulders?
I think we always, if it's their will, see it. But I've worked with comedians who will find the joke in, you know, like they'll see a joke and they won't resist it. They'll go straight to the joke. Whereas Dad, actually, I think possibly because he learned so early, because he was in his 20s when it all started happening, he actually kind of gently, without saying so, espoused the idea that if you're going to make a joke, if you're going to be funny about something, you want to make sure that you're not, that either you've got something to say or you're not sort of accidentally, you know, knocking out, you know, punching down, I suppose, is what they'd say nowadays, or, you know, that you've actually thought through what it means, what's beneath it. And, like, he would never have said it like that. He would have made it amusing in one simple line, but that's basically what he sort of learned. And he said, you know, I learned as I went. And in my early stuff, I'm a very coarse, kind of just finding the jokes where I can. But as a person, if there was an amusing way to say something, the amusing way was how he'd say something. It wasn't that he was, you know, thinking, oh, God, I better be funny. Mm. It was just how his brain worked. And, yeah, I think he could be pretty serious too. Like, he could have a serious conversation with him. A couple of times he would say something, you know, really flippant and funny when I wanted him to actually take me seriously. And I'd say, no. Tell me, actually, what do you think of this? And then he'd go, oh, okay, and speak seriously. So it wasn't that there was ever a wall between him and the joke. It was part of how he expressed himself, and he could drop it with us and talk to us really, you know, take us seriously and talk to us, like, you know, without having to go there.
Well, just going back to those notes to school, I mean, that was an early opportunity, I guess, for you to share your dad. But did this sometimes become too much, that you were sharing more than you really wanted to?
Well, it's interesting, really, because I hadn't had any other version of having a dad, and I loved my dad. We had a very uncomplicated relationship, the four of us. And because of that, which is a really privileged position to have anyway, I never resented it actively. But it did set up a kind of dynamic, an accidental dynamic within the family that could be a little bit unfair. And so there was sometimes a degree of anxiety. Like, if we were in public, things did get harder, and you sort of had to, like, you'd be in the middle of explaining something and someone would come up and talk to him, and you would drop your conversation, stand back a meter or so, pretend you were looking at this thing in this window of this shop while he spoke to whoever it was. And he did not mind doing that at all. And I didn't think that person's a jerk or something. I thought, cool, that's fine, you know, it's wonderful, actually. But he definitely kind of, there were things, like, one person told me a story after Dad died about this wonderful time they spent with Dad at the zoo, and it was an all-day trip to the zoo, and he was just such a doting grandfather, and this person was there with him all day, and it was just a wonderful day. And I was listening to this story and thinking to myself, I know that because I was there. And I'd been written out of my own story. So, you know, there are these inequities that kind of happen, and you can totally understand why. And I, you know, when there's a story in the book about when I was working on a deadline in a cafe on a laptop, and I was really focused on getting this thing done, and then I felt the mood in the restaurant change, and it just got really tense all of a sudden, and I realised instantly, God, I know what that is. And I looked up, and there was an Australian rules footballer who'd walked into the place, and the atmosphere had changed into this sort of intense kind of everyone busily pretending they didn't notice kind of thing. And I thought, wow, I do not miss that. And it was only sort of then, years after he died, it was probably in the first 12 months, actually, but I really did think, well, that's something that I don't miss. And another thing that I don't miss is kind of, I was, like, there was a sort of a benevolent shadow over us a bit of a time. And so neither of those two things were Dad's fault, and he did everything he could to make sure that he was including you in the conversation if somebody was coming up and talk to him and things like that. So yeah, it definitely afterwards I thought, oh yeah, that was actually quite a strain.
Yes, and there must be times when you think you're running out of time, as unfortunately we are running out of time. It's been such a pleasure talking to our guest today, Lauren Clark, about her new memoir, Would That Be Funny? Growing Up with John Clark. And I can assure you there are a million delightful family stories in the book. I suppose it's really just up to me now. I've just got one thing to say, and that's thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you so much, Bill.
And don't forget, we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. Send us an email when we'll be in touch, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So we'll be back next week.
Baby.